Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Lee Sinclair 4-Grain Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged, double-pot distilled, non-chill-filtered bourbon has creamy, round, and lifting notes with caramel and vanilla, followed by apple, mint, graham cracker, and ginger, as well as cardamom. The finish is slightly French walnut, resolving the sweet, fruity, almost ground cherry and white pepper. Our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick. Respect the grain. Please enjoy responsibly. Spirits of French Lick is proud to introduce the Matty Gladden Bottled and Bond Bourbon. This 4-year-aged bourbon is double pot distilled and non-chill filtered and has a full-bodied mouthfeel with eucalyptus, molasses, clove, ginger, and slight citrus as well as grains of paradise. The finish is long and reappearing on the back of the tongue with notes of pepper, tobacco leaf, and mint cream. All of our spirits are available for tasting and purchase inside the French Lick Winery and Distillery. Spirits of French Lick, respect the grain, please enjoy responsibly, and be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Here again. Ah. That one's for you, young nose.
Wash your name away to the next whiskey bar.
Welcome back to another exciting podcast of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Woo! Tonight, it's just Tiny. It's been a while. Working by myself, we're getting close to the holidays. So there's a lot of extra, what would you say? People are a lot busier than they normally are. But we've got a great week coming up. We are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. We can have Xavier. He was on the last podcast. We can have Super Nash. We can have everybody on together. There's Roxy. There's also Young Nose Johnson, myself. So we've got, a lot of different combinations for the podcast. But tonight it's just me. We are getting close. It's around the holidays, I believe. Tonight, let's see, today is Friday, December 10th, and I wanted to put down this podcast because we are going to get really busy coming up, and we should be doing some podcasts in the next week, but our schedule, one of the things I wanted to cover, we're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. We have a Facebook page and a Facebook group, and that group is getting ready to meet on Saturday, December 18th. Can't wait for that to happen. December 18th, that Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Barrel Room in North Canton. That's where it is, the Barrel Room. It's on Cleveland Avenue. Anybody locally in the area listening to the Scotchy Bourbon Boys or a part of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, you're invited. Contact me on Facebook or Messenger, and we'll make sure you get you set up. We are going to be tasting a flight of 1792 full-proof single barrel and bottled in bond. It's a reasonable price. It will be under $15 per person. There's going to be a food truck. We are excited to have our first out of my house Scotchy Bourbon Boys meeting. Carrie Sullivan, the owner and operator of the Barrel Room, has been very, very, she's cooperating with us extremely well. And I think we are on the verge of having really a kind of a cool partnership and looking forward to many more meetings there, but I can't wait for the first one to happen. This should be pretty fun. I'm working on getting the people who are going to be coming. I'm hoping to have between 20 and 30, 15 to 20, 20 to 30, right around there. If you're interested in that meeting, that is Saturday night, December 18th, 7 p.m., the Barrel Room in North Canton. check out for details. You can check it also out. All the information is online at the group. So, also, we are on YouTube. I've been putting up YouTube videos. Yeah, I've finally gotten it down to be doing some editing. I was dragging my feet on some of that stuff, as everybody knows. Talk about every time, but getting two off in 2 days. Hopefully, I'll get this one up really quick this week. Also, there's an exciting thing that's going to happen next Friday night. It's the Scotchy Bourbon Boys are doing Whiskey Live. Super Nash is coming in for the... He's going to come in on Thursday. That would put it December 16th. And he will be here for the Friday night Whiskey Live tasting here in the podcast studio along with Mrs. Xavier, and Roxy. We should have an awesome time tasting Michter's bourbon. Their standard bourbon. That is what we're going to be tasting live. If you've ever, we've taken a break from the Whiskey Lives after I wasn't, you know, we all of us, my wife and myself and my son, we're finally feeling better and we're picking that up. But we're picking that up with Zavi. So Zavi is going to be running it. You'll see something. There's going to be a lot more marketing towards it. Zavi will run it on their platform, which is a really cool, a lot of spirit-based podcasts, and I'm looking forward to doing that. We should be doing that twice a month through them, but the first one is Friday night, 9 p.m. on December 17th, so look forward to that. Look forward to everybody coming, listening. If you're around on Friday night, it'll also be recorded and put up to the different groups. So look for that tasting of Michter's bourbon. So Kentucky straight bourbon. So that's going to be pretty exciting. So we've got a lot coming up with that, with the meeting. And then also the morning of October 18th, that Saturday, we are going to be podcasting and bringing back Young Nose for a Johnny Walker high rye tasting with Super Nash, hopefully Xavier, myself. Well, it's just going to be, the group's going to be together, that back together in full strength form for that podcast. So look forward to that podcast on the Johnny Walker high rye bourbon. Then you can look for us also on, we talked about Facebook group page, and then also Instagram, we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. YouTube, we just talked about that. And then also Twitter at Scotchy The. So we're all over the social media. I'm looking into other social medias. So we'll check out everything that's going on with that coming up. But also remember, you are listening to us on your favorite podcast format. Please like, subscribe, and leave some good feedback for us. That really helps out in the popularity of the podcast and who gets to see it and how well it's searched. So make sure that you give us the love that you want to give us if you like what you're hearing. If you don't like what you're hearing, please, you know, you can keep listening, but please do not. Hey, my son's coming by.
Hello.
You want to take a picture for me? Just for the podcast while it's going on. I sure. Normally don't get pictures. So here's my camera, and take a couple pictures of me podcasting. And maybe from that way to get the other stuff back, you know, not that, this way. Okay. How about this one? Yeah, there we go. Yeah. She's taking them from all different angles. Since the podcast that my son was on, this is Seth, he did the Basil Hayden bridge bourbon. I would have to say that 100% it didn't bridge him.
It did.
He's
not.
Still
the
not a big
not
he's still not a big bourbon drinker, but we'll work on him.
Hey, I'm not a big anything drinker anymore.
Yeah.
The college days are over.
Yep. Getting on to real life, and then once, but you're in between that.
Yeah, so. I'm in the in between where I'm still not, can't hold my liquor enough to do as much as you, but I just came out of college, so I'm like, kind of don't want to had too many bad experiences.
Yeah, except for the fact that then once real life sets in, then you'll start drinking more again.
Well, good thing it's not real life yet.
Nope, not at all. All right, thanks.
No problem.
All right, so that brings us to what we're... Oh, also, please support us on Patreon. If you don't know how to get to the Scotchy Bourbon Boys on Patreon, go to www.scotchybourbonboys.com. And in the top right-hand corner, click the button. It will take you to our Patreon account. Lots of different things that and different ways to support us. Please, support means so much to us. We appreciate everything that you guys do. All right, so... This podcast, there's two things I'm going to cover a little bit on this podcast. Is one, we are going to tackle what is the master distiller and what master distiller means. That's the first subject. And then in a little bit later, we're going to take on when Super Nash gets here on Thursday. We are going to be doing an extensive dive into what our Scotchy Bourbon Boys Bourbon of the Year is going to be. Now, honestly, last year we gave out, because it was 2020, we gave a non-bourbon actually the award. It was Little Book Chapter 4. We did it because it was 2020, and everything was fucked in 2020, so why not give a blend that isn't actually Kentucky straight bourbon or straight bourbon, the award for being bourbon of the year. But this year we're taking it a little bit more seriously. And, tonight I was going into a little bit of depth before the podcast on what my bourbon of the year is going to be. There was a lot of bottles that I had purchased and not tasted, so I was tasting them and trying to come up with what my contribution to that podcast is going to be, what I think, because what we're going to do is each of us, Xavier, Roxy, myself, and Super Nash will have what they think, and then we're going to taste them head to head and see which one. We're going to barrel batch them to the bourbon of the year. That one might take a little bit. I think that might happen Friday afternoon before the tasting, or Friday night, one of those, Saturday afternoon before the meeting. We are going to put that podcast in the books. So that way, but there was a lot of bourbon I didn't realize that I hadn't tasted. And then there was some I had tasted that I revisited to see what I would put up, what I was putting, what the competition was. And picking a bourbon of the year is not an easy thing to do in this day and age, because there are so many fucking good bourbons. I mean, there are some delicious bourbons, and it's going to have to stand out. And that's one of the cool things about it. So I was... I'll talk about that a little bit in coming up, but let's get into what the master distiller connotation means. Now, I've been around a lot of distillers, and most of the distillers are uncomfortable with master distiller. And there's one reason why they're uncomfortable with that master distiller connotation, is because they all understand to make good bourbon and then sell it, or good whiskey, or good any distillate, and then be able to sell it, it takes a huge team effort. And the master distiller usually is the orchestrator of that team. He's the team leader, but in some cases, when you're dealing with larger corporations, it gets, what would you say? It gets a little bit muddled with the ownership of some of the larger distilleries that still have the connotation of what master distiller is. And they all take on, and master distiller is pretty much a marketing ploy to basically promote the current distiller, head distiller at the distillery, to promote what's happening so that everybody understands who that person is and what his outlook is, or his his overview of what's happening with what he's making and is a part of making, is basically marketed because people want to know what his overview of everything that's happening and his opinion on the quality and what's going on, you know, at the distillery. And in reality, it's the view of everybody that's participating in this. But really what it comes down to is he is representing the brand. Now, here's the head distiller at Limestone Branch is Stephen Beam. And he looks at himself as that he is the steward, the person watching over the Yellowstone brand. And the Yellowstone brand is the main brand that Limestone Branch produces. It's on pretty much all shelves across America. At that distillery, it's being distilled in many different places. It is now owned by MGP because they bought Luxco, who owned Limestone Branch. And so Stephen looks, as he said, he is the person, the steward, that is watching that brand and making sure the quality of that brand is happening. Now, they brought that brand. He's responsible for bringing that brand back, because that brand was on hold for a while, but it's back, and he looks at it like his job is to make sure that the quality that's going in the bottle is the quality that should be going in. He oversees that, and there's a lot of different things that a master distiller and decisions that they have to make. They have to taste barrels. They have to make sure that the barrels are mature, that they're up to the quality and the flavor profile of the Yellowstone. So that's where the head distiller comes in. But usually, and I like to use the Watershed Distillery, where Greg Lehman was the master distiller or head distiller down there. And now he has hired Aaron Harris, who comes from the Barton 1792, and also, I believe, he was at Luxco. And coming from those distilleries, he's come up, and now Greg, who was the owner, the starter, in charge, and Ann Dimmick, who came from Wild Turkey, as far as overseeing the maturation of the barrels, and she is also in marketing. The three of them now have basically, through the team that they're running, come up with and really brought the brand to another level. Initially, Watershed was an okay bourbon for me, but it was nothing to me special. But then I heard that Aaron was there, and they've been around for 11 years, I believe, right now. And he came on board, and when he came on board, we started talking. But what they've been releasing since the team is, you know, he's considered the master distiller, but he's the head distiller because the team is always tasting. They're competing against each other to find good barrels, good mixes, good, you know, to understand what they have in their inventory and then bring it to the public in a way that is delicious and everybody loves. And that's what they've been doing. So the head distiller can make all the differences in the world. It's the palate and the mixing are skills that a lot of people have. Now, granted, the skill is open for discussion because you're looking for, as a craft distiller, like you are down there, is for to sell the product that you're making, the amount of product that you're making. So the skill has to come up with something that, you know, everybody loves. But in the past, Watershed also did a phenomenal job of marketing, and they still do a phenomenal job of marketing. So they were able to bring their product to all of Ohio and then in other states, and they did it really well. It was the market was very saturated with Watershed, bourbon and gin and that type of stuff. But now you throw in that team, that final pieces of that team, and now the bourbon is winning double gold and they're doing well, and that team is everything. And Greg is still a part of that team, 100%. But now he's teamed with Aaron, and Aaron and him are coming up, and Anne are coming up with some very fantastic tasting whiskey by seeing what they got in their inventory. And their inventory is what Greg had put forth, but now it's taking the bright barrels and putting in, making those batches to make this really, really good bourbon. And that's a key. And then when you get into a place like Jim Beam with Fred and Freddie No, we have documented well that Sandy No is the bourbon queen of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And I have gotten to talk with Fred a little bit, and then also Freddie at the barrel pick for the Knob Creek that I'm going to be tasting tonight. What they're doing is completely different than the craft distiller. They have a whole core, Beam Suntory breathing down their neck all the time. And so what they're doing is maintaining the quality of Jim Beam and Booker's and Knob Creek. And they have to do it on this massive scale. It's not 2-3 barrels at a time. It's 600, 700. So they're always, to be a master distiller, like at Wild Turkey with Jimmy and Eddie Russell, and to be with Fred and Freddie No at Jim Beam, or even Brent at Four Roses, or, the different larger distillery that are producing, mass producing whiskey for the world, those distillers, master distillers, are a little bit different because their jobs differ. But once again, you're still talking, they're uncomfortable with master distiller. They don't want to take away master distiller. They pretty much all feel that it takes away what the team is coming up with, because it's a team effort. Because for a master distiller at a large distillery to be successful, he needs people working beneath him, doing what he asks, and then also working with the team to be able to, when you're mass producing and making sure all the Jim Beam keeps tasting the same, you have to have that quality control. Because barrels, it gets hotter some years and whatnot, barrels have different flavor profiles. They know what they're looking for. They know what they're doing on the distilling end, and they know what they're doing to get into the barrels. But as far as a master distiller tasting on a consistent basis, keeping the flavor profile correct, that's a very difficult thing to do. It's something that you learn, or I really believe in some cases you're born with, because when you see a distiller such as Alan Bishop at the Spirit of French Lick, it's his love and passion what he's doing, but he also really has a good feel for what he's doing. He knows what he wants, what he has in the barrel. He knows what he wants it to taste like. So he works in those directions to make that happen. And it's a skill. You taste 24 barrels, one right after another, making sure that it's going to make your brand taste the way it's supposed to taste over and over. So you really find that the really good distillers understand the title of master distiller is more of a marketing ploy, and they are the head distiller for the time. And if they get called master distiller, they're not going to shy away from it, because a master distiller based off of, I actually have, here it is. Master distiller according to Wikipedia. Master distiller is often used for a distilling expert or a key leader or owner at a modern distillery. The title doesn't have a fixed definition. So in other words, you could not be distilling anything and still be considered the master distiller. Now, Greg Schneider is a really good friend of ours. He is in charge of bringing back the Chicken Cock whiskey brand from, you know, that left us from the after Prohibition, or a little bit after Prohibition. And then he's also considered, in the ads, they refer to him as Greg Schneider, master distiller of Chicken Cock whiskey. And he really is an artist, but he also understands what kind of team it takes. Now, he is working with other, you know, his team is different than a team where you have an actual distillery. He's working with people that he's contracting to bring this quality whiskey to the market. So that's a whole different kind of thing at the moment. They're not building a Chicken Cock distillery. They're utilizing by contracting and using people to create this wonderful thing. And Greg is overseeing it with a team that he's assembled. And that's one of the key things that he, you know, he's the Bardstown Bourbon Company is his team, and he uses their distillers also that work with him to produce the whiskey that he wants to put in the barrel. And he once again shies away from master distiller. He is a head distiller, but he really feels that when you say master distiller also, that you're taking away from the team. You're taking credit for something, even though you're running it, and the responsibility ultimately lies on you as a head distiller. That's still, but it's funny because you have head distillers who bounce around from distillery to distillery with those distilleries replacing the one that left. So really it comes down to their head distillers running the show. Now, one of the cool things about Jim Beam is that you are looking at the eighth and ninth generation master distillers going into position. And even Little Book right now, Freddie's son, you know, you kind of figure that down the road, they don't even suggest that you have to take over, but usually it's a no-brainer at one point for the nose right now. And what Freddie's done, compared to what Fred did in his life and what Freddie's doing in his life, Freddie pretty much has a jump start a little bit compared to Fred, because Fred wasn't ready right away and wasn't thinking all along as being part of the business, where Freddie, you can just tell that he pretty much loves his dad, and they have a great relationship. And what's happening at Jim Beam between the two of them has really increased some of the quality and what they're doing and where they're going forward. So once again, Jimmy and Eddie Russell, that's in itself a damn good team. They understand what they're doing at Wild Turkey. So if you really want to come down to master distillers, you could say that Booker was a master distiller, and Eddie and Jimmy Russell. And then also, I believe, you know, you're looking at, but the people who are not only distilling, but they've got that history and they're maintaining the family name and where they are in making their mark on something that is timeless. You know, it's been going on for hundreds of years, and brands can be timeless. And especially when you're dealing with like some of the bigger companies that are still going, I always felt that the best thing that ever happened was what Congress did in 1964 with the whiskey resolution. They did a resolution saying that it had to be made in the United States. And they basically saved whiskey with this resolution, because it would have been no different than the Hoover vacuum cleaner if they didn't have this resolution, that bourbon had to be made in the United States. If they would have not done that resolution in 1964, our bourbon would be being made in China right now. And the fact that they have this resolution, and you can't, all the bourbon distilleries that when this whole world markets started to kick in, when Walmart started showing up and things had to be made cheap and shitty, bourbon was quite frankly going in the opposite direction, keeping up their standards, making it better, finding ways to make it taste better, age longer, up the quality, better grains, better ingredients. And they've been able to, from that, survive, but also because it couldn't be moved to China, they basically, companies came in and bought it. You know, you got Beam Suntory, they bought them, but it's a partnership with the Suntory company to the point where Beam has been doing and mixing with the Japanese distillers and creating some damn good whiskeys together. I mean, it really was a great, I would say they foresaw the future with that resolution. And that's why the master distillers are still here. But once again, they don't like to be called master distillers. They like to be called head distillers. And I believe, you know, there's a few that probably have earned the title as far as when you really think about it. But really, when you're a master, when to be a master distiller or even a head, there's a lot of head distillers who run the day-to-day operations and make sure that the distillate's getting done, and they leave the rest up to the marketing department. They leave it up to the ownership, and they make the distillate, put it in the barrel, make sure it tastes good. That's a head distiller. But then there's the head distillers like Harlan Wheatley at Buffalo Trace, who is not only overseeing the day-to-day operation, but he's working on a historic, you know, Colonel E.H. Taylor, the dig that they brought, you know, that they did when they found the old fermentation tanks, and he's actually producing the same strain of corn, and he's making this great E.H. Taylor brand. He's not doing a lot of it, but he's working on it. But he also is overseeing all the construction that's happening. They're pretty much doubling the whole operation from Rick Houses to another still exactly the same right next to it. But he oversees that. And then also he oversees the brands. So he also understands that he's right now among some of the greatest distillers there was, but they've also at Buffalo Trace done an unbelievable job of marketing those distillers. When you go to that distillery, you feel the history. Same thing, you feel the history that you do at Jim Beam. So the marketing of that is very important, but the head distiller or master distiller can a lot of times direct that marketing, like Booker No did. He directed the marketing of the Jim Beam, of his Booker's and his, you know, small batch collection. And he hit the pavement. He was touring, and Fred did the same thing. And Fred and Freddie right now do a lot of engagements and talking and everything like that. So it's very important when you are the master distiller or head distiller that you go out and promote the brand, and that's part of the job. And, you know, it's just really kind of a cool thing. Lisa Roper Wicker of Widow Jane Distillery in Brooklyn, she does a great job of marketing herself and her product, and social media is part of it too. Now, I have to admit that when it comes to some of the master, the old guard, you know, the old guard master distiller, they're not as much involved with social media as the younger people, such as Alan Bishop at the Spirit of French Lick. He is on social media consistently talking about his product, and he's also on podcasts, and he's on his own podcast. It's just, he understands that part of the marketing as a distiller, which then he's on the new young up and coming distillers. And it's fantastic to see, because it's a whole different ballgame that's able to put a craft distillery completely on the map. They're able to promote themselves throughout the whiskey drinking population. And that's something that was very hard to do in the past, but now they have outlets and venues to do that. And it's very important for that to get done. Now, Aaron Harris at Watershed is not a huge, he's not out there on social media. He's making that and doing all the things. But Ann Dimmick really promotes the brand in the marketing aspect. So there's all different ways that it can happen to be a head distiller. And to be a master distiller, in my opinion, just my opinion, the key is that you're covering you're watching every aspect. You're watching the social media. You're doing the promotional ads, and you're going out and being on the podcast, but then you're also producing a great product, and then also going along and doing the footwork, and then overseeing everything and running everything so that the people working under you are basically doing it right. And to do that and understand that whole process, you're looking at someone that's been in the business since 1978 is when Greg Schneider says he started at Seagram's. It could be even earlier, but that's a long time in the business. He worked in all different parts. He worked in every aspect of it. The same thing, Fred No, started it on the bottling line, learned all the different parts. Booker made sure he knew how it's made. It's not that much different. When I started in recycling, went from an artist, a commercial artist, to a plant manager of a recycling plant, it took me a while to be able to tell people and run people that had 15 years experience on me, and I'd never done it before. But now, after 17 years, I've done everything and understand it, and it's a hell of a lot easier to manage the people to do what I need them to do so that the vision is what it is. And it's the same, is my vision is the same as management's vision, my cousin's. And the same thing happens when a master distiller, especially if they have corporate ownership, that in itself is a tricky slope that you have to basically not manipulate, but you have to make sure that the management is happy with what you're doing and the people are doing what you need them to do to keep management happy. So it is almost like an orchestra. You're the maestro, and you need to make sure everybody's playing and the final product is what it needs to be. But it is a total team effort, and that's what I think the master distiller truly is somebody who's doing all that. All right, so we covered the master distiller. Now, let's quick go over what I'm thinking. I tasted the Lux Row 12-year tonight, and it had a ton of cherry and caramel, and I'm thinking that's one of my finalists. The milkshake on the milkshake from Maker's Mark, which was a flavor that came out for Ohio from their Ohio barrel pick. That was absolutely delicious. And then I'm also thinking, there's a couple. I had Old Carter last weekend, and that's one. And then also it's Rabbit Hole. What is it? Rabbit Hole Race King. That one is also, those are the four that I think I'm going to narrow down, maybe next podcast. I'm not exactly sure, but hopefully by then I'll have down the one I'm going to bring to the table on our podcast once Supernash is here and we're all together for the Scotchy Bourbon Boys Bourbon of the Year Awards. And they'll have runners up and everything, so this should be pretty cool. Now, the last thing that we're going to cover, And I don't even know what's going on. Did I even record this? Yes, I did. When we were at Kentucky Bourbon Festival, there was a bunch of picks. And I was part of the pick for the Knob Creek. And I opened this one up. I helped pick this with Freddie No, Steve Coombsy, Randy Prossy, El Presidente of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, and also the president of Kentucky Bourbon Festival. And my good friend, this bottle is special. I loved every aspect of it. And I bought another bottle to save that I'm going to be taking down to have Freddie sign. But this bottle, you can see that's it's far down the line. But I haven't opened two bottles. And this bottle right here, which is the Rabbit Hole Single Barrel Cask Strength High Gold. You have not even had High Gold. So I'm going to pop that tonight and have a sip of it. And then I know... Hey, that sounds really good, doesn't it? That's much better, isn't it? Got it. That came off. It was in a special... It has a special label. I was able to pick the Mad Hatter because I love hats and I'm fucking mad. Here we go. That was one of the better pops. I'm going to put this in the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. Now, one of the things while I'm doing this, I'm going to put that in there. I'm going to put that up against the thing that... Okay, so one, we're producing the Scotchy Bourbon Balls. Now, we do these every year. They're selling like hotcakes this year. They're going out. Last year, they were selling good, but they're selling crazy. So if you're hearing this podcast right now, PM me or hit me up on Facebook or any way that you can contact the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And I have to say, I'll even do a shout out to Patrick. He's right here. Let's see. Here we go. Patrick Taylor. Now, he ordered them and he saw them online. The pictures look fantastic. Okay. I have somewhat of an artistic talent, commercial artist. I can really make things look good. But I'm telling you, folks, I'm telling you, y'all, that these bourbon balls actually taste better than they look, and they look pretty damn good. And so I sent him his, and he said, wait, he got him this morning. He's going to have them tonight, and he let me know what he thought. So I said, make sure you eat them at room temperature. And remember, they are for adults only. These are for adults only. These have a bourbon in the bourbon pecan soaked for up to 14 weeks in bourbon. And I soak them in all different bourbons. The two batches this time were Elijah Craig small batch. And then also I did a repeal batch, Jim Beam repeal batch. Those are the two different types of bourbon balls. Well, he said when he came back, he goes, absolutely amazing. Wow. Those are really good. Well done. Might be the best ones we've had. So that's the kind of response I get. They're $30 a dozen plus shipping, but as far as I'm concerned, they're the best that I've tasted. I understand I'm biased, but what I want in a bourbon ball is exactly my wife and I, mainly my wife, tweaked the hell out of this recipe to get to where we're at, and it's fantastic. So if you're listening, place an order. You can do it, comment on the YouTube, or you can come to the Facebook, messenger me. Even if you're not a friend of mine, you can messenger me. So this is year round. We sell them, but really during the holidays is when it picks up. So you might want to check out the Scotchy Bourbon Balls. So I've got the High Gold in my hand. Oh, I get a little spearmint. Wow. Like a minty fresh. No, I wasn't expecting that. A little vanilla. Now let's see. Maybe a baking spice, but still. The spearminty. Let's see what it tastes like. Oh. You got to remember. Cast strength. So this pick, 107.7 proof. 84 of 198. 30 years Bourbon Festival, Bardstown, Kentucky. Nice. It's the high gold single barrel cast strength. Like anything else, that doesn't qualify for bourbon of the year because it's a single barrel. And it's delicious. Honestly, folks, I've been tasting a lot of stuff tonight, and it's right up there with some of the stuff like the Race King. Race King has a lot of chocolate. That doesn't have chocolate, but that's got a minty, caramely, excuse me. I gotta think, really sweet, almost sugar. That's just crazy. All right, I've been dying. This is the one. This is the Maker's Mark. This was picked. Someone, Denny Potter, signed it. I almost don't want to open it, but I'm going to. It's the Bourbon Capital of the World, Bardstown, Kentucky, barrel pick. And it's a beautiful bottle, signed. But we'll open it because bottles were meant to be opened, right? I've never tasted it. It was just one. It should go, you know, it's funny. Kentucky Bourbon Festival, it's got the little thing. I'm going to taste it just to see, because guess what? Bourbon was made to be drank, not sat on your shelf to look good and impress people. I have a lot of freaking bourbons that are sitting on my shelf, but they're open, and that's what they should be. Because bourbon equals good times, good friends. And guess what? Tonight I'm by myself, which is even dumber for saying that, because good times and good friends with yourself. Cap. All right. I'm getting it. It's going to pop. Here we go. Ooh. This one. We're not even going to go into that. Let's add a little and see how much I'm going to covet this, because I was told this was the best pick of the batch. There it is. Golden amber in my cup. Not too dark. It's like a gold, like I said, golden amber. The high gold was a little bit darker, like a cherry. All right. I love Makers. All right. Wow, that is complex. This is, I believe, 110.7. Is it 110? Let's see. Let's get it in the light. Yep, 110.7. Let's try that again. This one I'm drinking in my Scotchy Bourbon Boys Glencairn. You could get these online. Contact me for it, or go to the website, buy it there, or support us through Patreon. You can get one there. This awesome Glencairn, courtesy of Martin Duffy, one of our greatest friends of the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. He is a Scotchy Bourbon Boy, but he is also the Glencairn Glass representative of North America, and he was able to get it so that we have these glasses. Check it out. It's a great gift for anybody who loves bourbon and loves the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. I enjoy drinking out of this glass immensely. There's so much you can do. You can lay it on its side, roll it around. Oh, the chocolate in this one is insane. I would have to say that's pretty good. but it's not as sweet as that High Gold cask strength. I would have to say the High Gold is pretty damn good. You're putting a high rye up against a wheater. Yeah, that wheat with the chocolate is pretty good. I'm really liking Maker's Mark these days with those staves. So it's a Maker's Mark private selects that are out there. And I would suggest anybody who comes across. Now, I do believe I have a set of... Did I put them in my pocket? Anyways, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to try and do it anymore. Let's see. Baked American Puree 3, Maker's Mark 46, 4 staves. The Roasted French Stave is 1, and the Toasted French Spice 2. That's what's this part. Signed by Denny Potter, and then this is for the Kentucky Bourbon Festival 21. Delicious. I really waited to taste these because I had lost my taste and smell, and I wanted to make sure they're back, and it was definitely a treat. Now, last but not least, I'm going to drop in my Jim Beam 225 anniversary glass. I'm going to drop a little bit of this Knob Creek. I wanted to put it up right up against it to see what we're talking about as far as how good of a picker I am. Put a little bit in there. This Knob Creek I did enjoy, and now that I'm completely back, I want to see what it is. I love the nose on Knob Creek. That's delicious. Wow. Between them all, that single barrel cask strength Rabbit Hole High Gold. Here we go. It's got such a sweet... I don't know what it is. It's not caramel. And it's not... It's not very unique. It's almost like sweet rye bread. Like a bready, yeasty sweetness. Like if that was sugar. Like if you could make bread sugar, that's what that is. The High Gold. I don't get a lot of rye. But now, on the Knob Creek... That mid-palate, sweet brown sugar. Wow. I'm going to have to say the Knob Creek is a little bit better than the Rabbit Hole, but not much. The three bourbons right here are just classic. What we paid, you didn't go wrong. These picks are fantastic. They're flavorful. They're right up there with the bourbon of the year. In all cases, but single barrels, it's not a fair comparison when you're talking about a bourbon of the year. So anyways, we covered the master distiller. We've covered the fact that we're going to have a bourbon of the year and a couple bourbons I've been tasting going up. And then we did a little bit of a comparison between, I didn't want a barrel bash or whatever, these three, because it's these picks are, it's, each one's so different. I'm not trying to put them up against each other. It's always good to put up wheaters against wheaters and, you know, high rise against high rise or cast strengths against cast strengths and, you know, what you're dealing with. And I just wanted to taste them on the podcast and just say, next year's Kentucky Bourbon Festival, they're already increasing the barrel picks. There's a bunch of people signing on for more barrel picks, you know, the same people, but then there's more people signing on to be a part. And I really believe that if you get a chance to go to Kentucky Bourbon Festival, you need to pick up some of these barrel picks. Justin's House of Bourbon sponsored it, helped picked these picks. Also, Steve Coombs and Randy Prossy. Delicious, wonderful experience that went with it that I had, and they must have just picking all these, and each one is delicious in its own way. So if you get a chance next year, get down to Kentucky Bourbon Festival and make sure you pick up some of the Kentucky Bourbon Festival festival picks. That's what these are. And they're absolutely delicious. So with that said, remember, we're the Scotchy Bourbon Boys, www.scotchybourbonboys.com. Check us out. Make sure bios and everything. Get some of those Scotchy Bourbon balls. Order them. They can be ordered on the website also. And then also check us out on your favorite podcast format. Please give us some good feedback. We'd appreciate it. And Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. All of them under the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. Check us out. Please support us. It's great to be able to do these podcasts. And we, you know, everybody, our supporters, it's just been nothing but good. We love you all. Thanks for listening. And remember, good bourbon equals good friends and good times. And get the fuck out there and live dangerously. Living is the most important thing right now. And if you're, you need to get out and live. So, with that said, good night, everybody. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Or if we don't find another whiskey bar, tell you we must die. Tell you we must die. Tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
Hey, Scotchy Bourbon Boys fans, this is Alan Bishop, Indiana's Alchemist of the Black Forest. So I'm tuning in here today to tell you all about the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute channel on YouTube. If you're at all interested in the art of distilling, whether it be home distilling or professional distilling, and the intense geekery that goes into that process, then check out the One Piece at a Time Distilling Institute on YouTube. I promise you're going to learn something you didn't know before about the arts.